It was a bittersweet day Saturday at Churchill Downs, a beautiful victory and a very tragic loss, all in 2 minutes. Big Brown, the undefeated three-year-old colt, won the Kentucky Derby, but second runner-up, Eight Bells, had to be put down after a freak injury to her front legs. Here's Big Brown jockey Kent DeSormo after the race.
This horse, he showed you his heart, and Eight Bells showed you her life for our enjoyment today, and I'm deeply sympathetic towards that team. I'm sorry for their loss.
Definitely a sad end to an otherwise exciting race. With us now for the highlights and the rest of the weekend sports wrap-up is Will Leach, editor of the sports blog Deadspin. Hey, Will.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. So there was a lot of hype, a lot of build-up to the Derby this year, the 134th race, drawing the second-largest crowd in the race's history. Did Big Brown, he was the favorite, but did he meet all expectations Saturday?
Yeah, he actually probably exceeded them. By the end of that race, it really wasn't particularly close. I think if what happened to Eight Bells had not happened, I think you'd be hearing a lot of those. A lot more people would be talking about Big Brown as a potential Triple Crown thing right now, because certainly the performance was dominant enough to show that. But yeah, when they put a horse down right on the track, that's going to kind of dominate the news a little bit.
So let's talk a little bit about Big Brown and what's coming up for this horse. Preakness is in 2 weeks, and as you mentioned, Big Brown has a shot at the Triple Crown. What are the stakes involved in this race for this horse and his owner?
The Preakness, the owner has actually already gone on record saying the Preakness will be a more difficult race for him. But certainly, I mean, if you watch what happened in the Kentucky Derby, it really was not really even that close. Very long time since someone actually won a horse won a race from that pole position. But it's funny too, because you know when you think about the Eight Bells thing, because again, Big Brown's going to have to win the Preakness for Eight Bells not to become like the next Barbaro type of thing. Mm-hmm. It's weird because when what happened to Barbaro happened, it became you would think it would have shed a little light on the fact that in horse racing, this kind of happens all the time, and as tragic and awful as it is, it's really not a rare occurrence. And I think maybe having now happened, having had this happen twice in 3 years, people maybe see that a little bit more. It's a terrible, sad thing, but this is hardly new in the world of horse racing.
Or, you know, the other side of that is the Triple Crown races attract a lot of attention from people who don't watch racing, and also a lot of attention from sports writers who don't cover racing. And I've seen the counter trend, which is to say, wow, with these two injuries, let's talk about how brutal racing is, and not really understanding what you said, that I think on average, you know, a horse or two a day dies in the United States. And this, it was freak injury to occur in this particular race, but overall it's not a freak injury.
Yeah, that's the thing. And this, you know, you're right. Like, this is one of the 3 days a year where sports writers actually pay attention to horse racing, to have that happen, it doesn't actually shed any light on it at all, except it just makes people that we all like to no one likes to think of this happening all the time. It's very, very regular, and it's sad. No one's denying that it's sad, but it kind of shows how maybe a little over the top the Barbaro stuff got a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it was sad to see Barbaro die, I don't know if that makes any Barbaro any more or less a hero than all the other horses that have to go through this on a pretty regular basis.
Before we move on to the NBA, is there anything out there now? Are there reports coming out, Will, about how she hurt her ankles, her front ankles? I mean, they're just saying freak accident, but has anything else come out?
They're still doing a lot of the reports on it. It does not appear to be one of those times where there's some debate whether it was broken actually during the race. I think a couple of experts have said the stride was a little different come down the stretch, that's actually probably the scariest part of it, because you realize that actually probably involved a lot of pain actually down toward the end. But they haven't nailed down exactly what it was yet.
Okay, let's move on over to the NBA. The New Orleans Hornets were on fire, literally on fire Saturday. Explain.
Yeah, they had a little bit of an issue with the flaming hoop that the mascot was going through. They had trouble extinguishing it and putting it together. So as it turned out, the game was started 17 minutes late, which was probably still not late enough for the Spurs, who all of a sudden looked extremely old really fast against New Orleans. And I found it kind of surprising. If you remember when the New Orleans Saints were making their run the first year after, you know, after Katrina, when their team started playing really well, and ended up making, they were like the story of the NFL. Like, everyone was so excited about the Saints, and they were America's team, and they were – but the Hornets – they don't seem to have quite gotten that, and which is like, they're a better team than that Saints team is, and they could very well win the entire championship this year. So it's a very odd thing that it seems like more people would be getting into the Hornets. That's a pretty exciting.
They need U2 and Green Day to write a song for them.
Yeah. And they need not to play. How many games did they play in Oklahoma this year?
In Oklahoma, they didn't play any games.
Oh, this was all New Orleans. Tells
you, all New Orleans team. So it was just a shame because I always kind of enjoyed when they were called the New Orleans Oklahoma City Hornets.
Yeah, the knock.
You could call them Nooch.
Nooch.
Hey, let's talk about the Celtics. Kevin Garnett had a good game, huh?
Certainly. The Celtics fans had to have been pretty scared going into that Game 7 yesterday. They were expected to sweep that series rather easily. And Atlanta's a team that I think you're going to have to look out for in the next couple of years. But definitely, in any fear that Boston fans had going into that Game 7 yesterday, got eliminated pretty fast. the Celtics were not messing around yesterday. And it'll be interesting, though, because it really kind of showed how there are real gaps in that team. As much as dominant as they've been during the regular season, a young, fast, energetic team can cause them a lot of trouble. Fortunately for them, I'm not sure Cleveland, that they're pulling the next round, is necessarily that team. But certainly, if Boston against, say, New Orleans in the NBA Finals, it's a pretty scary notion for Boston after watching that Atlanta series.
So let's talk about the Lakers. Kobe Bryant walking around talking about how he's the MVP, huh?
Yeah, it appears that he actually did make it. They haven't officially announced it yet, but inevitably some guy in the NBA office let it out to get more. What Kobe needs is more press.
Yeah, and a bigger ego.
But the thing about the game yesterday that was interesting is, you know, Utah just came off. They just finished up their Houston series. The Lakers had a lot of time off, so they're clearly more energetic. But yesterday's game was actually a very dull game because the refs were calling so many fouls yesterday that like Kobe Bryant shot 23 free throws yesterday.
We should say, did we say they were playing
compelling television?
Utah Jazz and the Lakers won 109-98. But you say it wasn't compelling. It wasn't.
It was just a lot of free throw shooting. I think it took a lot of that whole game kind of had this plodding feel because the refs weren't really letting them play very much. I think you'll see that relax a little bit in the next few games.
And finally, Will, I'm going to ask you a question, and you might just want to just wrap it all up and close this chapter of your life. But we did have on Buzz Bissinger last week onto the show, and he apologized again for the tone. We should remind people that there was a bit of an internet brouhaha when he pretty much took you down online on Bob Costas' show. And
I kerfuffle,
exactly. And you know, he then came on and he stood behind his remarks about blogging, what he called debasing journalism in our society writ large, pretty big statements. But he apologized for his tone. Have you spoken with him personally since then?
We had an email conversation that we both mutually agreed to keep private. But certainly, you know, the thing about him is, like, he's a wonderful writer and he's a wonderful journalist. And I think maybe he went into that interview perhaps not as educated about the world of sports blogs as I think may have benefited him. But certainly, I have no ill will toward the guy. So Friday Night Lights is a wonderful book. A Prayer for the City is a wonderful book. You know, so it's one of the things I was worried about going into the after this was that, you know, I think a lot of people that read sports blogs could really benefit from reading Buzz Bissinger's books in the same way that Buzz Bissinger could probably benefit from reading some of the best sports blogs. And I hope after this whole mess of last week that it's still possible for either one of those things to happen.
Well, setting aside his language, his tone, just about everything about his presentation, was there anything in what he was saying that you agree with?
Well, certainly I think that sometimes, in general, the tone online on any side can get pretty ugly pretty quickly. I always joke that I don't know if it's a joke, but you could make the claim that you could put a picture of a puppy online on a widely read like AP story, a picture of a puppy up there, and by this 20th comment, racial slurs are coming out. The conversation can get pretty ugly online. I don't think anyone would deny that. I think it was a weird position for me to be not only not necessarily defending Deadspin or defending sports blogs, but defending the internet.
All of the internet, yeah.
Which is kind of a difficult spot. And I think that's something that that not only Buzz, but even Bob Costas, a little bit. I think they would benefit a little bit just from even a cursory knowledge of how it works and how it goes on. I think it's a shame we didn't get to actually, because I think there's legitimate discussions and viewpoints on each side, and it's a shame that we didn't get to have that.
Hey, Will Leach, thanks as always, editor of the sports blog, Deadspin.com. Thanks, Will.
Of course, thanks for having me.